Indigenous News.
Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
Good morning. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service, and if you're listening via our website or podcast on 989fm.com.au. Welcome to you as well. It's really good to have your company this morning. Tiger's away again this morning, so it's just me today, but we'll be talking about a really important issue that's happening up in the Northern Territory. And our guest this morning is the North Australian Aboriginal Justice Agency, or NAJA's, I think, Chief Legal Officer, Jonathan Hunyor. Jonathan, how are you this morning?
Very well, thanks, Amy. Yourself?
Yeah, good, good. What's the weather like up in Darwin?
Oh, look, it's pretty good. We've had a bit of rain, which has been nice, so it's a little bit cooler than it's been.
Oh, nice. We've had continual rain over here in Brizzy, so I'm getting sick of it. But first of all, we're talking today about the High Court challenge you took, and NAJA took to the High Court recently that was just handed down over paperless arrests. But it, I guess it was sparked by the death in custody of Kumanjoy Langton. Can you tell us a little bit about his death? Because I understand his funeral only happened recently.
Yeah, sure. Look, his funeral actually had to be put off. It was meant to be early last week, but I understand it might be happening this weekend. We're still in touch with the family. That is happening around now. And it's a sort of a sad reminder of why we still think the laws, even though the High Court's found they're valid, are bad laws. So Kumanjoy was picked up in May this year and was taken into police custody and held under this paperless arrest law. And the law doesn't actually create a new power of arrest. Police pick people up using their existing power of arrest, but what the paperless arrest law allows them to do is to hold them in custody without necessarily having to take their matter to court. And it applies to people who they're picking up only for minor offences, so for what they call infringement notice offences or on-the-spot fine sort of offences, which is typically things like offensive language or drinking in a public place, and it covers some really sort of old-fashioned, weird offences like play musical instruments so as to annoy or fail to keep yard clean. So it's a really, really broad sweep, but they're all minor offences. And what the government said when they introduced this was it was designed to allow police to clean up the streets and to take people out of circulation, was the language the
take people out of circulation. God.
Yeah, that's what our attorney said in Parliament, and he described it, I thought, pretty tastelessly as a form of catch and release, like the police were involved in some kind of sport fishing. But the idea was to pick people up, hold them for up to 4 hours or for longer if they were intoxicated, for this minor offence, and then let them go with the summary infringement, with the on-the-spot fine. And really what we've always been concerned about is that this is taking people into custody who don't need to be in custody because they've committed only a minor offence and one that they could get an on-the-spot fine for. And the part of the purpose of that regime is to avoid having to arrest people, you know, it's to be able to give someone a fine on the spot without having to take them into custody or take them to court. But what this regime really encourages is for police to arrest people, which raises the danger of deaths in custody, and it raises all of those other dangers that come when police get involved, of someone then arcing up and ending up with other charges for assault police or resist arrest or that sort of stuff. But it allows police to take people and hold them in a police cell and then let them go. And unfortunately, as in the case of Kumanjoy Langton, he didn't get to leave. And when the coroner looked into his case, the coroner was very critical of these laws, and he said Kumanjoy Langton shouldn't have been arrested. It was an unnecessary arrest, and that he was entitled to die as a free man. And we very much agree. And really, that was one of the reasons why we'd commenced this case in the High Court, to challenge the validity of the laws.
And the High Court actually found that there was that arrest was unnecessary, but I guess under these laws it still wasn't unlawful, was it?
Well, so the High Court didn't have to look at his arrest, but the way that the law was interpreted by the High Court basically said, look, the 4 hours is a maximum period, so you can't just hold someone for 4 hours automatically. You need a reason to hold them for that amount of time. And once you've decided what you're going to do with someone, if you're going to arrest them and then you take them into the police station and you decide to give them an on-the-spot fine, then you've got to release them. You can't just hold them for another few hours just for no reason. And I guess the High Court reminded us in the decision of the importance of reading laws and understanding laws that take people's liberty away, reading them very strictly and making sure that there's always a purpose for holding someone under arrest. So the High Court said, no, you can't just take people into custody, put this notice in their property and then let them out at the end of the 4 hours. Once you've decided to give them a notice, you've got no basis for holding them. You've got to let them go. And that was what had happened in Kumanjoe Langdon's case. That was the police policy at the time. And so it follows from that Kumanjoe Langdon's custody was probably unlawful, and I think our attorney has come out in The Guardian and accepted that that's probably the case. But it just highlights the way that these sort of laws can be misused and misapplied and the sort of tragic consequences that come with it.
Do you think that there's a possibility that these laws will continue to be misapplied? Because when we consider that, you know, police often arrest blackfellas quite a lot, they're often very visible. I mean, do you reckon that even though the High Court has ruled against and said that, you know, the paperless arrest laws are okay, do you think there's still that problem that police in practice are still going to continue to do this?
Well, that's going to be the challenge, and it is still a concern that the laws still give police a lot of discretion as to how long to hold someone. So the High Court found the laws were valid. We said they were invalid because they were punitive. They were effectively punishing people and trying to subvert the court system. It should be the court that decides when people get locked up, and police can arrest people if it's a last resort and if it's necessary to protect safety or stop someone committing another serious offence. But we said, look, in these cases, that's not what's going on. What they're really trying to do is impose these little periods of imprisonment without a court having to be involved. Now, the High Court didn't agree with our interpretation because they said, no, this power can only be used by police in a way that is not punitive and is for a shorter period of time necessary to decide how long, what to do with someone. So there's obviously the danger now that police will say, oh, well, it took me 4 hours to figure out what to do with this person.
Yep.
That's clearly a danger. We obviously hope the police won't do that. You know, we don't want to suggest that all police are out to do the wrong thing. We hope they'll realise what this case says, and that is that the power is a limited one. It needs to be applied appropriately, and that's what we'll be obviously looking at if clients come to us and say, hey, I was held for 4 hours and they could have just let me out after 5 minutes, or I was held for 8 hours and I was a little bit drunk, but I wasn't so drunk they should have held me for that long. That's when we'll be trying to make sure we're holding the police to account. But it goes back to another fundamental point about the decision of the High Court. The High Court found the law was valid.
Yeah.
But they didn't say it was a good law. They didn't say it was a sensible or a fair law or a just law. They just said it was constitutionally valid. And our argument is still this is a bad law for all the reasons that were given by the coroner when he looked into Kumanjoe Langdon's death. And so even if it's valid, we still think it's a law that should be scrapped because it encourages the arrest of people, and overwhelmingly Aboriginal people. Over 85% of the people picked up under the laws are Aboriginal, and it's encouraging their arrest and detention when we know that is absolutely the wrong way to go. So we think that makes it still a bad law.
I'm just wondering, with paperless arrest laws, how do they go? We often have, I mean, it was a previous death in custody with Kumanjoe Briscoe where he was taken into custody for his own protection. How do paperless arrest laws contribute to that problem in relation to taking people into custody, largely because they're intoxicated?
Yeah, well, so there's a separate regime in the Territory for protective custody where someone is so drunk that they're a danger to themselves or others, and that's what Kumanjoe Briscoe was taken in for. He was very heavily intoxicated, and that's a regime that unfortunately sees a very large number of, again, predominantly Aboriginal people in the Territory, but certainly not exclusively, but people who are so drunk they're a danger to themselves or others. I guess we need to recognise that that if people are a danger to themselves or others, there's a legitimate purpose for keeping people out of that danger. But the worry is that this is a different thing. This paperless arrest law is about something else, and that is about using the police power of arrest to effectively clean up the streets for people committing minor offences.
Yeah.
So this law doesn't say that police can arrest you for a minor offence if you're a danger to yourself or others.
Yeah.
If it said that, it would be much less offensive. But really, and what the attorney said in Parliament was this law was designed to make police less arrest averse. He wanted them arresting more people. and, you know, that just, you just got to, I mean, the best you can do is shake your head, otherwise you'll be shaking your fist in anger at that sort of nonsense.
Because that's what happened to Cumminjay Langdon. He wasn't actually severely intoxicated. He was in the park and he happened to have a bottle on him that they took as an alcohol, full of alcohol, wasn't it? That was what the coronial inquest found.
That's absolutely right. So the evidence was that he was seen to be drinking out of a green plastic soft drink bottle by a police officer who was about 100 metres away. The police officer decided he was drinking alcohol because it was a park in which people frequently drank alcohol.
And he was a black fella. That was basically it.
Well, frankly, yeah, that's right. And look, he had done nothing else to draw attention to himself. He was an old man having a drink in the park with friends at the end of a day in the dry season. And there was no reason to be arresting him or taking him to custody. He wasn't a danger to himself or others. And so that's exactly the problem with these sort of laws. You throw the net wide and you just scoop everyone up. And, if we haven't learnt from the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody why that's wrong, then really we're just not even trying.
Have laws like the paperless arrest laws put a strain on NAAJA's workload because of, the added people going in to custody for short periods of time?
The paperless arrest law is designed to keep organisations like NAAJA out of the picture. So the whole point of the paperless arrest law is that people don't end up going to court. They are taken to the police watch house. They're held for however long they're held with and let out. And unless people then choose to come and see NAAJA because they want to challenge it, and a lot of people at the end of that ordeal are just happy to, get on with things and don't really want to go through it all again. So people don't then come to court and see a lawyer. So actually it hasn't seen an increase in our workload, but that's something, we don't ordinarily like an increase in our workload, but something that we're not comfortable with because it is a way of effectively avoiding scrutiny. Instead of having, if ordinarily someone's picked up by police and charged, we see them down at court, either because their case comes to court or because they are in the cells at court, and that's when we're often alerted to problems. People will say, hey, the police were cheeky with me, or, I want to complain about this, or they shouldn't have arrested me, or whatever. And it's a really important part of scrutiny and making sure that things are being done the right way and that powers aren't being abused. So we haven't seen an increase. What has increased our workload massively is alcohol protection orders, which are another way that Aboriginal people are being really really hammered by police and again locked up in greater numbers. And the alcohol protection orders are something that a police officer can put on someone who's committed an offence while under the influence of alcohol. Which bans them then from drinking or being in licensed premises or possessing alcohol. So obviously, if you're someone who is an alcoholic, and you're someone who drinks commonly in public, and you're placed on one of these orders, then suddenly your addiction is made a criminal offence. And if you drink, you're going to be committing an offence. And that's what we're seeing a lot of in courts. People who are coming up 17, 20 times, because, of course, police let them out and the next day they go drinking. And
so do you see an accumulation of these problem. Yeah, you see an accumulation of these sentences and all these court orders, and then people end up getting quite lengthy jail sentences for their alcohol problems.
What we're seeing is a lot of people getting continual 1 or 2 day sort of sentences. The magistrates have been reasonably unimpressed by the charge of breach alcohol protection order because they recognise the the futility of it, of picking people up and cycling them through.
Mm.
But the worry is it means that people are getting this constant cycling through the police cells, constant arrest, constant harassment. And again, you know, have we learnt nothing? That is such a dangerous thing. It's completely unproductive. It doesn't help people deal with a problem of grog abuse. It doesn't target people who are necessarily creating a problem. It's just someone who's drinking. So we have people continually being picked up who are minding their own business. They're having a drink while they've got grog in their possession, and they're being arrested for that. And all to what end? It's achieving absolutely nothing, but it takes up a lot of police resources, a lot of our resources, a lot of court time. And it's another way of unfortunately throwing the power of the state at Aboriginal people in a way that's pretty depressing, really.
And I mean, you mentioned before the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody. I mean, we've known that criminalising drunkenness for a long time doesn't work. I mean, why do you see, what's the reason behind the anti-government seemingly, you know, ignorance over this problem? Because the information is out there and the experience is out there.
Yeah, look, I think it's a part of a theme or a pattern up here of very heavy-handed, sort of hairy-chested approaches to dealing with difficult social problems. So the response to a lot of things in the Territory is to lock people up, is to, you know, send in the cops. And I think there's a sort of a rhetorical appeal to it. You know, it sounds good. It's, oh, we're going to crack down hard on this, and we're going to have no tolerance for this sort of behaviour. And that may kind of sound appealing to some people, but the fact is it's not based on any evidence as to what works. It's never worked. As you say, we've been having this debate for 25 years since the Royal Commission, but for much longer. What we've been calling for at NAAJA is some sensible, clear thinking on this. We ask the coroner to recommend an independent inquiry into alcohol laws in the Northern Territory, and he did. He accepted our submission on that and made that recommendation, because we need to take the politics out of it. We need to take the chest beating out of it and say, you know, we've got a grog problem here in the Territory, not an Aboriginal problem. It's a problem for all of us. We drink too much, and it causes problems in our community. And we need to be dead set about that. We need to say this is a problem. It causes massive harm. There are lots of victims of crime from grog, and it's not acceptable. But the question is, what do you do about that? And it's not good enough to just be kind of outraged and to send in the police. So we want there to be a real inquiry by experts, and not influenced by the grog lobby and not influenced by the politicians, who can actually say, well, how are we going to deal with this as a community in a way that is going to work, in a way that is not unjust, and in a way that's not going to put more people's lives at danger through the dangers of death in custody.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you talk about it being an Australian problem, and I think one of the problems is that Northern Territory and Australia has to come to terms with the drinking problem, and that's a lot harder. They can say to blackfellas, you have to stop drinking, you've got to get a grip on this problem, but it's really hard to break that social norm that Australia seems in the grip of in relation to alcohol, isn't it? It's about breaking the whole societal perception of it.
Yeah, that's right. And the fact is that we need to, as a society, ask what price we're prepared to pay to try to fix this problem. And in the Territory, they had a regime of the banned drinkers register where everyone had to show their licence to be able to purchase alcohol, and people who were banned weren't allowed to buy alcohol. And that seemed to be having a positive impact. Police were in favour of it because it didn't impose on their resources, and it seemed to reduce violent offending. The hospitals reported that their admissions for violence went down. So it was very much in its early stages, but the early signs were good. The CLP scrapped that as soon as they came in. It was the first thing they did. They scrapped it when they came into government, because a lot of people were complaining they didn't like to have to show their license when they went to buy alcohol.
White people didn't like it.
That's right. And look, you know, that's the challenge, isn't it? What price are you prepared to pay? If you're not prepared to show your license as the small price to pay for trying to deal with grog, then maybe you're not that serious about it. But you're on the other hand, you're happy to have other people arrested by the cops. So, I think we've got to take a hard look at how much We really care, and how much we're prepared to work as a community to deal with what's a real problem for us.
And I know you can't talk on behalf of Kumanjoy Langton's family, but obviously whenever a death in custody happens, there's that severe feeling that, you know, you'll never know what actually happened, or there's a severe lack of justice. How are the family dealing with this death in custody?
Look, the conversation I had with Mr. Granitz, so Rex Granitz was the senior man from the family who instructed me. His response to me from the coronial inquest was that the process was one that he was happy with. He felt that he did get good answers from that. Obviously, he was relieved to discover in a way that his brother had died from natural causes, so his death hadn't been caused by police. The tragedy really was that it happened in the lonely and depressing and degrading circumstance of being locked up in a police cell. So he was happy with the process, but the thing that he emphasised, and he said, I think, since in the media, is, look, really, why isn't government and why aren't police coming and talking to Aboriginal people about how to deal with this problem of grog? And Rex was very distressed at the countryman he saw, Yapa, going into town and drinking, and he was, he found that distressing, that this was something that so many people were doing, and he was very keen to be part of trying to find solutions to that and trying to deal with the problem of grog for his people. But he was saying, why are government making these laws without talking to us? Why are they making these laws that impact on Aboriginal people without making us part of the solution? So I guess that was his real challenge that came out of it, was if we're going to stop this sort of thing happening again, we should be working together. And unfortunately, instead, government seems keen just to make policies without including Aboriginal people and without having them at the table.
Even with an Aboriginal chief minister, that's what I was amazed at. Obviously, he's representing his electorate, Adam Giles, but, I mean, do you see a way forward in the current political climate, given we do have sizable Aboriginal representation in Parliament and in the CLP party now?
Well, I think that we've just got to keep pushing for that real leadership. And this is the difficulty. We've got politicians who will often be trying to do what appears popular or what will play well in the media, and often around election time that means this sort of knee-jerk law and order stuff where you want to be seen to be tough and to be taking action. But real leadership is not just about following and doing what's popular. It's actually about bringing people along and finding consensus and finding new ways of doing things. And I guess that's where we're really interested in holding government to account and to pushing for that leadership and to saying and saying, come on, these are difficult problems, but they're things we can solve if we work together rather than with simplistic and short-sighted sort of approaches.
And with the last question, with the paperless arrest laws, the concern from Nadja and a lot of legal groups has always been that, it's going to lead to another death in custody. Do you think that's still going to be quite likely in the future?
Oh, look, it's very hard to say, and, no one could wish that, but it becomes inevitable. I mean, this was the lesson from the Royal Commission. If you want to have less people die in custody, you need to lock up less people, and there's no evidence that we're learning that lesson. So in the Territory, we just have this sort of consistent introduction of new laws and new ways of locking people up, and that makes it inevitable. When the paperless arrest laws were introduced, we said this makes it more likely that someone will die in custody, and another person will die in police custody under this regime if it stays in place, because we know that's just the reality of it. So we need to recognise that unless we deal with the problem of over-representation of Aboriginal people in the justice system, over-representation of people in cells, and we keep relying on these same lazy approaches of just locking people up and sort of cracking down, we're going to have the same sort of results, and we're going to be having the same conversation, which is absolutely tragic.
It definitely is tragic, and I really want to send my condolences out to Kumanjoy Langton's family, who are burying obviously their loved one and their elder this weekend. And thank you so much for all your hard work as well, Jonathan. I think it's really important what Nadja does, and just making it public as well, I think, is really important. So I really appreciate you coming on the show this morning.
No, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Amy.
Thanks for that, Jonathan.
Good one.
That was Jonathan Hunya from Nadja, North Australian Aboriginal Justice Agency, talking about the paperless arrests up in the Territory and the sad case of Kumanjoy Langdon, who was an elder from Yuendamu who actually was in Darwin seeking medical treatment when he was locked up, I think, in May last year under the Northern Territory's paperless arrest laws, which allows police to lock up someone on an infringement notice for up to 4 hours. So he passed away of natural causes. He had chronic health problems, but the High Court and the coronial inquest in the High Court later confirmed that he shouldn't have been there. He was locked up for, you know, largely no reason. He should never have been in jail. He should have been given an infringement notice on the spot. But the High Court have actually just ruled that the paperless arrest laws are valid, but Nadja is saying that it's still a very bad law that could potentially lead to more deaths in custody, which is something that we don't want, you know, 25 years after the Royal Commission, or more than 25 years, I think it is now. But we're going to go to a song now. It's Last Tear from the Charcoal Club.